You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Today, we continue our series of That One Play with one of the iconic plays in Ravens history. It's one I always think of when I think about this particular game. And in fact, if you have certain plays you like to start the game on, this is one for me that if I'm watching the recording again, I'll usually just go directly to this point in the fourth quarter, start watching the game from this point, because this is kind of the beginning of a great comeback. But here to talk to me about it is Brandon Croxton. Brandon, how are you doing?
Hey, Ken. It's great to see you.
Great to have you on too, Brandon. And Brandon let me know in the production meeting. He went to Gilman. I went to McDonough. They're arch rivals in Baltimore, if for folks who don't know that. But Brandon was a defensive lineman, and he also played with Marquise Douglas, which is pretty cool.
Oh, yes, that's right. Correct. I played at Howard University with Marcus Douglas, and we lost contact. We haven't spoken in years, but I was a big fan, obviously, when he was there. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
11-year career in the NFL from 2000 to 2010. Really made the most out of what was big tackle for loss machine, very disruptive interior defender that was a good player for the Ravens, particularly in 03 and 04 when you go back and watch that. But Brandon, we're here to talk about it's just a wonderful game. The Seattle win over Seattle 44-41 in overtime in 2003. Incredible 17-point comeback that started with about 7 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Do you want to set up maybe the situation coming into the game?
Sure. Yes. This is back in 2003. The Ravens were actually on a 2-game losing streak. They were going into the game at 5-5 record. And playoffs were looking very dim that going into this game. And during the game, it got even worse. We really were kind of in a bizarro world in this game. The offense had scored 24 points through three quarters. And the Ravens back then, that signals a two-score victory back then with the way our defense played. But Matt Hasselbeck absolutely shredded our defense to bits and threw over 300 yards and 5 touchdowns that day. And we found ourselves down 41-24 halfway through the fourth quarter. And leading up to that play, the Ravens had what I kind of call a waving the white flag punt, where they punted the ball away to Seattle with about 8 minutes left in the game. And Seattle actually fumbled the ball knocked off of one of the special teams men, and Baltimore recovered. And so it was obviously our last chance to get back in this game. And
what I really remember about that punt and the way it was fumbled, it went off right off the top of the head of one of the receiving players. And then I think Joe Myasi might have been the guy who covered it up. And anyway, the Ravens had another chance. And then was Jamal Lewis fumbled the ball right back, right?
Yes. Very next play, Jamal Lewis fumbles the ball away. And this is where half the stadium just got up and started walking out, including my grandfather, who was with me that day. He slammed his program down and just walked out, and it's like, there goes the playoffs. And I was right there with him, but I decided to stay a little bit longer and, you know, see if a miracle could happen. And so very next series, the defense stopped Seattle for a punt, and Ed Reed came off the right side of the defense, left side of the punt team, and went straight upfield and did a great swim move on the Max Strong, who was the fullback he was the tight end on the position, blocked the punt and picked it up and scored a touchdown. It was absolutely, you know, crazy play.
Incredible play. There's two things I really remember about it. The first is Reed has an amazing get off on the play. He's out of his stance like a shot. And one of the things that they came back to, and they might have even said it on this broadcast, or it might have been another one of his punt blocks, was that Reed really focused on the opposing center. He says, the center has any kind of a hitch, you know, I own him. And basically he could get off right at the snap, and then makes it very difficult, obviously, to stop if he's got that extra half step. As you know, as a defensive lineman, if you can anticipate the snap, what kind of an advantage you have. The second was that Reed actually seemed to kind of bait the man who was closest to him into thinking he could make the tackle by kind of cutting back towards him by the goal line, which to me was very strange. But obviously Ed Reed was kind of just showboating a little bit at that point.
Yeah. Like him scoring on that play was a mere formality. I mean, the ball practically stuck in his chest after he blocked it. You could barely even see if it actually hit the ground. And he picked it up and strolled right back in. And I'm kind of curious. I couldn't find it online, but because I don't think they were really tracking it there. But I mean, the win probability for Seattle before that play was probably in the high 90s. And I can't imagine even that play was that, you know, they were probably still at least in the 80s after that play, because even after that point, the Ravens were still down 10 with about 6.5 minutes to go, and they're getting ready to kick off back to Seattle. So it was at the absolutely turning point of that game. But, you know, in the grand scheme of that whole game, I can't imagine it being, you know, that much of a turning point.
I rarely have other people come on this show who want to quote win probability, with the exception of Dan Reese, who's my by the numbers partner. But it is very fascinating that you say that, because I think you're probably right. Probably 99 to 91 maybe was the kind of change they had on that play. They may even have it. You know where it may have it is Pro Football Reference may have an approximation for it. You don't have to trust their model, but they may have an approximation for it that would be something. But, you know, the play that probably was the big turn was probably the pass interference call. I don't even think the 4th and 28 would have done it, because the Ravens still had to get the ball back after the stop. Could be the 4th and 1 stop in that game, where Orlando Brown was on the field. That could have been also another one. But I think probably the pass interference call was the big swing in win probability, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I would guess so. Yeah, there was just such a comedy of errors in order for the Ravens to come back and win that game. But this was a play that is, you know, is it was the catalyst of it all.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it wouldn't have happened without Reed getting it started like this. But this is a game where I expected, and you're the first one who's actually picked some play from it. But I was expecting there to be probably 4 or 5 plays that people could take from this game. I think there are about 15 big turning point plays in this game when you talk about it. But the punt that gets fumbled off the head would be one, even though it didn't really lead to it. The strip by Ray Lewis of Mac Strong on a forced fumble play immediately after Adalys Thomas had that penalty to give him a first down that looked like that was going to close the game out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. We had that.
Yeah.
We had the. I don't want to.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I don't want to hog this, but go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. One of the things that rewatching the game was, and I think this had to have been an error by the referee. So, it was right before that the 4th-and-1 Hasselbeck play. The referees called a illegal substitution on Seattle, and then they waved off the penalty. Now at that point, the Ravens didn't have any more timeouts. So I mean, without that penalty, I think they probably should have reset the play clock and reset the game clock to let it run down. But they didn't. They let the game clock stay stopped, and that was another big play that I don't remember if they said anything after the game about.
Oh, they did.
This was an error over the refs, but okay, yeah.
Holmgren was coaching Seattle at the time. He was furious about it at the time. But that is one of those plays as well. You could point to as being the. I think that was on something on 2nd-and-4 or something. That's set up 3rd-and-1. So yeah, it was 2nd-and-4, and then Sean Alexander ran for 3 yards on the play. The play stopped, and they. Went back and forth on this, and then they reset the football. They didn't start the clock, and Seattle's calling in real time for, wait a minute, start the clock here kind of thing. And, Matt Hasselbeck didn't want to go to the line of scrimmage, and Holmgren was talking to him about it, but he didn't talk about it until after the next play. So I don't know if there wasn't any challenge component to it. I mean, this is just misofficiating and probably unchallengeable anyway, but after the fact, one of the things I really liked about what Holmgren did is, they lost that game in a lot of ways, and you could point to that as the reason they lost the game, but you're much better off taking the high road, both for your own fans and your own team, but also for the rest of the league in terms of how that went. It would have been it was an ugly black mark anyway on officiating in the National Football League, but it was an interesting, it was nice to see him take the high road.
Right. Yeah. It was, yeah.
And they had the 4th-and-1 stop. They had the 4th-and-26 conversion. 4th-and-26, 4th-and-28, whichever it was.
I think it was 4th-and-28. And because it was one less shorter than Hey Diddle Diddle, Ray Rice up the middle. and it was just a mini Hail Mary. Marcus Robinson, who had the monster 4-touchdown game that day, Anthony Wright throws it up to him. He tips it, and Frank Sanders catches the ricochet. And I think he managed to get out of bounds too on that play. I can't remember, but and just an incredible play right there.
Yep, it was at the 2-minute warning, and he got out with 1:51 left, so it had to be an out of bounds there because they wouldn't have had time to snap that. That's my recollection too. But Frank Sanders is not remembered much, and because he didn't do much for the Ravens, he had his whole career basically in Arizona. When he came here, I think it might have been about his 3rd catch of the year, but it was relatively early in the season. He had his 500th career catch, and he'd had 3 of them or 7 of them or whatever it was with the Ravens. And they announced it was during a home game. I have never been more underwhelmed by a moment. And I know it was important to him probably. know the whole audience here. It's like, you don't need to tell us about Frank Sanders.
I vaguely remember that, but he spent his whole career elsewhere, so he was very new to the team, and this wasn't like Steve Smith or Anquan coming over here towards the end of their careers. He was, you know, he wasn't nearly that type of player, and I think it was good that they recognized that for him, though.
Yeah. Anyway, the pass interference call on Marcus Trufant was a cutoff play, one you rarely see called, but they called it at the end of that game, and I think legitimately he was trying to cut off to Marcus Robinson, but it's one of those plays. They knew exactly who they're going for, and Seattle had not had a lot of success stopping Marcus Robinson this game. And then that set up the field goal. Then in overtime, Marcus Robinson came back and converted a 3rd and 15, I believe it was, right? Third and a lot, anyway.
Yeah, it was a big play, and it's just so many clutch plays in that. I mean, on a third down too, because you know they're probably punting the ball back to Seattle, and Seattle could go down, kick a field goal, and he just a huge play and a huge throw by Anthony Wright. He won a lot of people over, including me that day, even though I should have known better.
Anthony Wright or Marcus Robinson?
Anthony Robinson.
Yeah. It was an interesting game. Like he couldn't speak in complete sentences after the game, which was interesting. His wife was going to labor, a lot of confluence of events coming into his life at that point. But he led the Ravens down the stretch. They went 5-1 with him to make the playoffs. Yeah. And unfortunately, they didn't get it done in that first round against McNair, despite a very game effort for the defense. But I remember that 2003 team very fondly still.
Yeah, me too. I think that 03 defense behind the 2000, it's right up there with the best of all time. I consider the 03, 06, and 08 defense is probably the best after the 2000. And yeah, I mean that team was absolutely loaded. That was Ray Lewis's second defensive player of the year. Ed Reed's first Pro Bowl. Ed Reed's my all-time favorite Raven, so I'm very fond of him and that play and that game. Gary Baxter was a really good second corner. Yep. McAllister's first Pro Bowl. My buddy Marcus Douglas he was a very solid defensive lineman. So, yeah.
He had a big role on that line and on the 04 team as well. He had 10 sacks combined, but between those 2 years, that's a lot for an interior defensive lineman. As we know from today's game, 21 tackles for loss, but he was always a reestablished line of scrimmage kind of guy. Do you know Marcus is more of a penetrator or more of a two gap player who could hold his ground? Even I'm not going anywhere kind of guy.
Yeah, he was a penetrator. He was a three. He was a three tech in college, and he just was absolutely explosive throughout every season that he was there. He was 2-time MEAC Defensive Player of the Year, and he was best defensive lineman that I've ever seen in person or in college at all. He had a really solid career for an undrafted free agent.
We'll have to make sure we tag him on this show, and hopefully you guys can reconnect after this, but that's very cool. Brandon, absolutely love having you on for this. Great discussion, all kinds of great theory and thought going with it. I appreciate all the research you clearly did going into this. Tell folks if they're interested in talking football with you online where they can do that.
Well, I'm not really on Twitter or anything like that, but I am a season ticket holder. I'm in section 106, so you can always come and visit me right there.
All right. Fair enough. Brandon, thanks for coming on. Other folks out there, if you'd like to do a show in this series of That One Play, hit me up with a DM on Twitter. They're always open. I'll be interested to get right back to you in terms of what your idea is. Brandon, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you. It was great. Great to talk to you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. Thank you.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.